This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Bruce Flans. Bruce has had this magnificent career. He's also the CEO of Medicis Health Network, and he'll describe Medicis to us. They have also done a remarkable job with a diverse community handling COVID-19. He's going to talk a lot about that today. Bruce, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Well, thank you very much, Scott. So I've been with our organization, Medicis Health Network, for 45 years now, and I'd like to share a little bit about Medicis with you. We're a safety net organization located in Queens, New York, which is the most culturally diverse of the 3,000 counties in the United States. We consist of two safety net hospitals, Jamaica Hospital and Flushing Hospital. We have a long-term care facility. We have extensive ambulatory care facilities. We do about 750,000 outpatient visits a year. And we have a very significant commitment to value-based payments where we take full capitated risk on 155,000 individuals. Our annual operating budget's about $1.5 billion. About 50% comes from those VBP arrangements. And our overall payer mix is 60% Medicaid, 20% Medicare, 5% uninsured, and 15% other.
Bruce, take a moment and talk about how you've handled COVID-19 in such a diverse community. Thank you.
So Queens, where we're located, was the epicenter of the COVID crisis. And one of our safety net hospitals, Jamaica Hospital, is a level one trauma center with a very significant history of exporting our talented clinical staff to other areas that have been impacted by disasters. And we've been doing that for about three decades. So, for example, starting in 1992, we sent teams down to Homestead, Florida after Hurricane Andrew devastated that community, and we reopened up Homestead Hospital. In 2001, with 9/11 in the World Trade Center, we had eight of our ambulances on the scene at the Trade Center. As a matter of fact, one of our ambulances was so early on the scene that it was demolished when one of the towers came down. Fortunately, our medics were already out of the vehicle. In 2005, we sent teams to Louisiana after Hurricane Katrina, and they were on the ground there for about a month. And then more recently, in 2017 and in 2020, we sent teams in response to a request from Governor Cuomo to Puerto Rico, first in 2017 after Hurricane Maria, and then most recently, just this past February, at his request, we sent teams of mental health professionals to help out after the earthquakes. And we learned a lot of lessons from these deployments, and we developed tremendous expertise in emergency management, which has helped us considerably during this COVID-19 crisis. So just prior to the crisis, one of the first things we did was our emergency management team established six work groups. We had our project management work group, our clinical care work group, staff education and training, ancillary and support, human resources and workforce safety, and our inventory management work group. Second thing we did was we understood the value of communications. So every morning we had an 8:30 situation call. At 10 o'clock, we have our safety huddle. We have constant communication with our various work groups. And during the crisis, I put out about 17 different video messages to our team of 6,500 employees to keep them up to speed on what was going on with regard to our response to the crisis. The third thing we did was we recognized that the challenges from COVID-19 were increasing exponentially, and in a very short period of time, it just ramped up incredibly. So we learned that you have to make the best decisions that you can based upon the information that's available at the time, understanding that that information is going to be constantly changing. Fourth thing we did was beginning in the beginning of April, We saw the peak of the crisis in our community, and New York City was truly inundated and overloaded, and the same applied to the Medicis Health Network, where we were seeing on average about 500 admitted patients per day, and 150 or so of those were on ventilators. And this really stressed our liquid oxygen system because that's about three times our normal volume, and the demand just kept increasing. So what we did, working with the governor's office and the commissioner of health, we decided that we had to rebalance the load and we needed to transfer a number of our COVID patients to other facilities. But because everyone in the greater New York metropolitan area was on overload, we transferred first to patients up in the to the Albany Medical Center and other hospitals in the Albany region, which is about 150 miles north of Queens. In 1 week, we transferred 108 COVID patients, 45 of whom were on ventilators, and another 30 or so who ended up on ventilators. And then we also utilized the USNS Comfort, which was the naval hospital ship docked in Manhattan, and we were the first hospital to send them ventilator-dependent patients. We sent them 11 vent patients and another 29 additional COVID patients. And then in a similar way, we sent patients to the Javits Center, which was a field hospital set up in Manhattan, where we sent about 68 patients. And over this first 3 weeks of April, during the peak, we transferred out 232 patients, 76 of whom were already on ventilators, and another about 75 who ultimately needed ventilator support. And then the next thing that we learned, and similar to what I just described with these transfers, we learned the value of relationships. And for example, the relationship that we have with the governor's office, the state health commissioner, the mayor's office, members of Congress, Haney's, that's the Hospital Association in New York State. I'm the chairman-elect of that group. The Greater New York Hospital Association and the American Hospital Association. And those relationships proved to be tremendously valuable in facilitating some of the movement of the patients. And then the last lesson that I'd like to share with you is the importance of PPE. So our workforce is our greatest asset, and having our employees understand that their safety is our top priority, right from the beginning of the crisis, we always had enough PPE to take proper care of our team members.
And take a second, Bruce. I want to focus on two more things. Can you spend a minute? You've had this remarkable career. Can you spend a moment just giving people a little bit of the background of the entirety of your career? Because I don't think many people realize the remarkableness of your career.
Well, thank you. That's very flattering, but I'm only one member of our team. We're very fortunate that we have an extraordinary team that we're very proud of here at Medicis. I've been committed to this organization and to this community for 45 years now, and our team on average has been with the organization for at least 25 years. So, for example, our chief financial officer, our chief operating officer, chief medical officer, and all of our VPs have all been together for over 25 years, and that creates a tremendous trust in the team, and that's really enabled us to do some remarkable work that we're very proud of. For example, one of the things that was reinforced during the crisis, which we have been quite aware of, is the disparities that exist in communities like ours. So I've had the pleasure of serving our community, which is an inner city, socioeconomically challenged minority community, as I said, for 45 years. And this COVID crisis just reinforced the racial and ethnic disparities that exist in our community. And how disproportionately disadvantaged people living in our community are. We here at Medicis have dedicated our careers to bringing critically needed services to the people of these communities. For example, we are in the stroke belt, and we provide comprehensive stroke services to our patients on a level that people living in more affluent communities in New York City can easily access. And for us at Medisys, it's all about providing high quality, low cost services because that produces value.
And take a moment on your three top priorities for the rest of this year.
So that's a great question. So we're simultaneously planning for the next surge. So we're accumulating as much PPE as we can. We are creating additional critical care capacity, both in terms of space and training additional staff. And simultaneously, we're preparing for the new normal, however that's defined. So we're incredibly creative and innovative. We have really ramped up our telehealth program, both in ambulatory care and urgent care, as well as in psychiatry. And we are really focusing, on expanding our VBP strategy. As I mentioned earlier, we take full capitated risk on 155,000 individuals, another 15,000 in other VBP arrangements that have shared savings or shared risk arrangements. And our care management team, which really has done an absolutely superb job, especially during the crisis, has really stayed engaged with our patients. For example, they were constantly on the phone talking to our patients about food insecurity issues, depression screening, and they also did a lot of counseling. Unfortunately, there were many times when they would call one of our patients and find out that they were recently widowed because they lost their loved one to COVID. So that was a tremendous service that they have been providing. And having this VBP strategy previously has been very financially beneficial, but during the COVID crisis was especially important because it provided a steady stream of revenue as opposed to some organizations that may be more focused on fee-for-service reimbursement and more dependent upon elective procedures. And then the third thing that we're focusing on, as I mentioned earlier, was constantly trying to provide additional services to the people of our community because of them being disadvantaged, historically.
Thank you, Bruce, for spending time with us today. One piece of advice for leaders, any thoughts that you have you'd like to share for emerging leaders developing great careers, give us one piece of advice.
Well, hopefully you'll find a place in a community where you feel you can really make a difference. And if that happens and you're as fortunate as I have been, you might consider staying there as long as I have. I've now been with our organization 45 years, and I feel like I'm truly making a difference in people's lives, and that is enormously gratifying. So I wish that to any colleague that is searching for the same thing.
Well, it's really remarkable because you actually started before child labor laws and started when you were 3 years old.
Thank you.
I know just 48 now, but yes. Bruce, what a great pleasure to visit with you. What a remarkable career. It's really the best that the country has to offer in compassion and empathy and great brilliance in serving communities. Just magnificent, Bruce. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No, Scott, you're very kind, and it's truly my pleasure. Thank you, and be safe.